The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres speaking. I forgot, the official radio show of the Big Apple Con. Gonna have to get used to saying that. With me on the phone, I have our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino. Say hi, Charlie.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
I guess we're doing all right. How are you doing, is the question.
Oh my God, well, this is just an example that a senior correspondent shouldn't go out playing two weekend in a row with the band
outdoors.
Yeah,
you got to start.
Did everybody see the pictures on Facebook?
Yeah, we put the pictures up on Facebook of you performing the bongos, right?
Well, percussion. Which bongos and congas? But that was unfortunately I couldn't be here last week because that's where I was.
You were performing.
Right, yes.
Outdoors, in the cold.
Oh, my God. Yes, that's to say the very least, which I think I was also playing this Friday night, and I think this is the cause of my empty seat right across from you.
Yes, yes. Speaking of the empty seat across from me, if you're having trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com, listen to us on a live audio streaming, and as Charlie alluded to, you can actually see us on the GBB website. Well, see me, unless you have that high-tech spy equipment. As you can see, yes, me being slaughtered to death on the web camera. But
I love that.
And I guess we'll just take it away with the news. The news is brought to you in part by the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official show of the New York Comic Con, of the Big Apple Con. I have to get used to saying that. They're going to have a show called the Winter Con at December 6th and 7th, not mistaken. It's the first weekend of December, and they're going to have a convention in March, a one-day show, with no one other than Jason David Frank, the original Green Power Ranger. So I'm totally excited about it. For more information, go to nycbm.com. That's nycbm.com. And we have Hassan Gawin also on the phone. Say hi, Hassan.
Hi, Hassan.
So you heard me getting strangled to death by the...
No, I did not hear that.
Oh, you missed it.
Yes. Which is terrible. I'll have to wait for the archive.
Yes,
I didn't
yes.
hear you plugging the Power Rangers yet again.
Well, because we are the official show of the Big Apple Con, and they are having him as a guest, so I should mention it. I think it's important.
It is an important mention.
Yes.
The glee that you mentioned it with is, you know, I don't know. That's a little extra that you're throwing on top of it.
All right.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. So, reasons I've gone over infinitum on this show.
Yes, yes. So let's go with the sad news. Gerard Parks, best known for playing Doc on the Jim Henson series Fraggle Rock, died of natural causes last Sunday, just 4 days after celebrating his birthday. Born in Dublin, Gerard launched his
career. Not the way you do it, by the way.
Wait, you died before your birthday?
Huh? No, you don't, no. You do it months after.
Oh.
You don't do it 4 or 5 days after. That's not how you do it.
Okay.
He didn't do it right.
He didn't do it right.
That's
going to be his tombstone. He didn't do it right.
He did not do it right.
He did it right after celebrating his what birthday?
Well, I was going to get to that. His 90th birthday.
Oh. 10 more years, the letter.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he didn't do it right.
You have to wait 10 years after your 90th birthday before you die.
Look, man, you want a letter, you got to do what you got to do to get the letter. That's all it is.
So anybody who lives to 100 on the tombstone B, they got the letter?
Exactly.
100 years old, you get the letter.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm aiming for the letter.
Really?
That's basically my goal. I don't know who the president will be at the time, but I want my letter.
Well,
I could die 4 days after I get my letter. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I am opting for the second letter. You know, I figure by the time that comes around, they'll have new drugs out to keep us alive forever and ever.
That's true. And flying cars, which is always a must-have.
Yeah.
Born in Dublin, Gerard launched his career on CBC Radio in the 1950s and began acting in television with a 1960s appearance on the series The Encounter. Gerard is also known for his role in 1990s action flick The Boondock Saints, playing a bar owner, also happened to be named Doc, with Tourette syndrome. So if you were a fan of Fraggle Rock, which I was not, but I knew who he was.
I was. Fraggle Rock was the first thing I ever videotaped with my VCR.
Really?
Now, yes, it's very little known because very few people know that aspect about me, but I became a fanatic about taping everything in the mid-80s, late-80s, early-90s, when that stuff was still prevalent. And I would tape the news. I would tape anything. I just love the idea of recording something and then being able to watch it later, regardless of whether I was even interested in it or not. So it became significant that Fraggle Rock was the first thing I ever successfully videotaped, because there was, back in the day, VCRs were kind of complex instruments. They weren't household items at the time.
They no longer are.
Well, now, yeah, we've come so far in life that they became household items and then became passé and got tossed out. But when for the first few VCRs, they were like $500-$600 when they first started selling them. Were very complex pieces of machinery that you had to...
And that was the, what was that, the Sony Betamax?
The Betamax,
It
yes.
was not the Betamax. It was my first VCR was definitely a VHS. But
so you were behind the curve, huh?
It was a monster. It was just this huge hulking thing. And it wasn't just because I was smaller then. It just really literally was this huge hulking thing that took, like, you know, man hours to program so that you could be able to record something. And the first thing I was, you know, I had several attempts, and they all failed. I would record the wrong channel or record it, you know, it was static and whatever. The first thing I ever managed to successfully record was Fraggle Rock. It was the first thing ever. I cannot express this more, that I have, like, I literally, before I cleaned this apartment out, had boxes, like, literally, like, deep, you know, book-sized boxes of VHS tapes of just several hundred of them that I've spent, you know, the last, like, 20-something years just recording everything.
Wow.
But the very first thing I ever recorded was Fraggle Rock.
Did you a fan of Fraggle Rock, Charlie?
No. But I definitely agree with Hassan, because it was the greatest feeling in the world to come home from wherever you were coming home from, school or whatever, and then go to that VCR and have that program that you actually set and programmed to record actually happen. It was a big thing. So I understand what Hassan's saying. And I thought Fraggle Rock was an amazing show. I didn't watch it, but I caught, you know, things back and forth. That at about that time that Fraggle Rock was airing, it wasn't, you know, I am the senior correspondent, so it wasn't priority on my list to watch.
Yeah, you were busy doing actual adult things, like actual normal
yes,
things.
I was actually having sex instead of watching Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, that's what I meant, actually. Okay.
Or having
sex watching Fraggle Rock also, but then you get arrested. So I understand what you're saying, Charlie.
Yes, yes. You know, I was on to bigger and better things.
I don't have a segue for this.
No, we got it.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Good job.
all right. For those of you who don't know, despite the fact that Disney owns Marvel, they still do not have all the film rights to most of their characters. Sony owns Spider-Man and all the Spidey-related characters, and Fox owns X-Men and the Fantastic Four. Because of this, Marvel, which is Disney, has mandated that no new characters are to be introduced in any, i.e. X-Men-related books, so that way Fox won't be able to use them in future movies.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're kind of...
War has begun, huh?
Yes.
War of ownership has begun.
As long as they cannot create a new character in the X-Men books, then they do not have the rights to use them in the X-Men movies. It's kind of a smart move if you think about it.
Which means, basically, that they're acknowledging that they're not going to get the rights back to the X-Men anytime soon.
Well, not with the amount of money that last one made.
No. There is talk that Sony might sell the rights to Spider-Man back to Marvel.
Yes.
Because of how they botched the Spider-Man franchise so badly. And I usually consider that like internet chatter or like fanboy anger.
Right.
You know, which they refer to as butt hurt. But I honestly do agree that the Spider-Man franchise, the Amazing Spider-Man films, whereas there are some really great things in those films, namely the special effect depicting Spider-Man, the CG for Spider-Man or whatever, and the actual overall depiction of Spider-Man doing Spider-Manly things, especially in the second one, was far superior that to the Sam Raimi films. Unfortunately, that's just because of time.
Right.
That's just because like the technology was not there. So the depiction of Spider-Man has been great. I'm not crazy about the Peter Parker depiction. I thought Gwen Stacy was fantastic, but I thought the first one was redundant and not necessary, and I thought the second one was kind of off tonal and didn't really make any sense. None of it really had to happen. It really didn't advance the story. So I'm in full agreement when they're saying, well, you know, you guys need to give it back to Marvel so they can throw Spider-Man in the Avengers or do a whole new, throw Spider-Man in some of the other franchises that they have.
Right.
It would probably reboot the character significantly. Like, imagine if Spider-Man was in a Captain America movie. Or
would go crazy.
Yeah, or the proposed fourth Iron Man movie. That'd be amazing, and that would reboot it, and everybody'd be like, all of a sudden, as though the other movies didn't happen, everyone would be like, well, when are we going to get the next Spider-Man movie?
Right.
So I hear that is a definite possibility, and I kind of hope that it happens.
And if that isn't enough, Marvel has decided to cancel their Fantastic Four comic with issue number 645, just before the new Fantastic Four movie hits theaters. So they're even going that far to be like, yeah, we're not even going to promote our own stuff.
Why did they cancel the book?
What was that, Charlie?
What a dream that would be for Sam Smith if Spider-Man was in a Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah. Yeah, actually. So they want their stuff back, and they're gonna be as, I guess, passive aggressive as they can be.
Oh, so you're saying the Fantastic Four movie is not owned by Marvel?
No, the Fantastic Four movie is owned by Fox.
Ah, so Marvel's gonna turn around and cancel the book.
The comic
been around for 50 something years.
Yes.
So now, Mark, because I'm really not listening to the show. No, I'm just kidding. I am. What is now? Marvel has it in the contract that. Who has the contract?
Okay, Disney owns Marvel, and Marvel has the ability to make whatever comics they want. But when it comes to film, not TV, not cartoons, but film only, Fox has, say, whatever comes out of the Fantastic Four franchise and the X-Men franchise, and Sony has Spider-Man. So,
yes, it's in the contract under the side letter of na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's almost perfect. That describes it perfectly.
Speaking of Marvel.
How do you do it?
For those of you who live under a rock, the latest trailer of Avengers 2 just premiered online a few days ago. what
you live under a rock would not be listening to this show, by the way. But okay.
They might be.
That's true. If someone walked by their rock with it playing off of their smartphone, then I could see what you're saying.
What you may not know is that it was intended to be shown for the first time during next week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
it
was leaked early online. Quick to respond, Marvel said that the leak of the trailer was from Hydra, which is the bad guy in the Captain America and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, and that another brand new trailer with more added footage will be shown during this week's S.H.I.E.L.D. show. Of note, the leaked trailer gained 34.3 million global views, which is the highest number of views any new trailer has received ever in the history of people watching trailers.
Broken record. Wonderful.
Somebody screwed up. The trailer got leaked, and it was going to hurt their ratings for S.H.I.E.L.D., which is already hurting. And so now they have to, the ratings are still down, despite the fact that people are enjoying it more. You know, the internet chatter is that it's a better show, but the ratings are not there. And so they're trying to do everything they can to get people to watch the show, which would be throw out that trailer, which 34.3 million global views would have helped out.
That would have been a coup.
But
I would say,
yes, Charlie.
What? They should have that they don't have anymore that could help shows like S.H.I.E.L.D.
What?
My dog even says it. They should have repeats. They don't have repeats anymore. Back in the old days, they had repeats. And if it wasn't for repeats, All in the Family wouldn't be the biggest hit that it is, you know, it was in that time. But now they don't have it. They don't rerun the shows anymore. They just make new shows to take over for the off season that the shows aren't on.
But you see, that's the trick, because that means that you have to see it that first run.
No, but it doesn't always work. It's a cheat.
Well, again, what I'm saying is, if that was the case for All in the Family, it would have went in the archives forever as a show that failed.
Right, but in today's day and age, it's all about right here, right now. Nobody cares about the reruns. Nobody cares about that. I mean, in the old days, if I recall correctly, you used to have four new and every episode aired four times during the year, so that you get three more times. But now you don't even get that.
Right, and solidifying your theory is now anybody doesn't have to miss a show. They could DVR it and watch it after the show they want, you know, originally wanted to watch.
Yeah. So it's interesting how the field has changed over these years about watching a show. Like the on-demand, the DVDs, all that has changed, made everything different because of that very same VCR that Hassan was using way back when.
Yeah, Fraggle Rock.
All right,
before you move on, I apologize.
Yes.
I saw the trailer for the Avengers, and it's a good trailer. It really is, you know, like, I'll definitely check that out. But the hysteria behind it has been a little overzealous. I don't understand. I've seen a ton of trailers. The trailers always look good. I've seen stuff on the internet where these new wave fanboys are now dissecting the trailer or reviewing trailers for especially for the Avengers, and they've gone gaga over this trailer. I understand Avengers is a giant thing. Huh?
I said, all right, before you even finish that statement, I'm going to have to go and go back to when Meet Joe Black came out.
Okay.
A movie which in turn had the trailer for episode 1, The Phantom Menace, where people paid money to see the movie, saw the trailer, and then walked out, which made Meet Joe Black a successful movie.
Yes.
And people were going crazy over that trailer back then. So,
Right, that's a non-starter in comparison, because Star Wars was 30 years old at the time. They had waited 17-something years to see a sequel, to see any footage from it. That makes sense. Avengers was 3 years ago, and you got a television show, and you've seen each and every one of the Avengers in their own movies since then. So, again, overzealous. Not in the fact that they're excited about it. That's fine. Everybody can be excited about it. The fact that they see Jesus in behind the screen during the film that come out glowing and floating away from the theater, or, you know, whatever. Like, some of the stuff online has been insane. Like, this is going to be the greatest movie ever. It's going to be the greatest piece of art that Marvel ever made. It's like, it's absolute fanboy fluff that doesn't hold up in court, that is unsubstantiated, and that will fade away almost immediately if this movie comes out and, God forbid, it's a flop. Like, oh, you know, Marvel jumped the shark all of a sudden. So it's just madness. It's just, it's ridiculous how hungry people seem to be for any kind of content, regardless of how overstimulated we are with content as is.
But that goes back to what Charlie was just saying about showing repeats. That's why, you know, it's how things have changed, that repeats doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, it's mass hysteria, though. It's not a calculated, it's not like a calculated emotion or feeling or something, like, you know, or actual natural elation. Like, oh, look, this looks fantastic. I want to go see it. When you're giving it delusions of religious fervor, you know, like delusions of godhood, something is wrong. Something is not quite right, because these kids are not starved for material. It really isn't. It's more of a trend thing. It's more getting on board the trend bus before it goes into overdrive, because everybody knows it's gonna be crazy.
So
you know, the hysteria behind the Avengers is going to be crazy, and it's almost like people want to put their bid in first to be one of the people in the front of the bus when the bus starts to take off, when the hype bus starts to take off.
So Charlie, do you agree or disagree with this whole fanatic thing that's happening right now?
Well, I think I'm very cynical. I believe everything is done for a reason. I believe that leak of the Avengers. The Avengers trailer, I believe that that was meant to happen. So
yeah,
actually, they could say, oh my God, but if you watch S.H.I.E.L.D., there's going to be a new trailer or a trailer with added parts in it. So I think if a studio really wants to keep their trailers under wrap, they will do it.
But what about the fury that's behind this trailer? I mean, Hassan put it eloquently that it's people going way crazier than they should be, despite the fact that all these things have already been out there. You can see it anywhere, and all of a sudden they're just going crazy over one trailer, which is like a 2-minute clip of a movie, which is put together to make you want to see it. But we did a whole show about trailers, and so back in the day, was that the same way that, you know, they used to churn out horror movies frequently back in the day, speaking of Halloween
now,
time.
Back in the day, I have to say, back in the day, you saw a trailer and you definitely wanted to see the movie. There was an art to creating. I'm not saying there's not an art to creating the trailer now, but a lot of times with the trailer now, a lot of the best parts of the movie are in the trailer, and then you go see the trailer, and it was like, and then you go see the movie, and the movie's terrible. But back in the day, I believe they put just enough in the trailer to get you interested without giving the whole thing away or putting the best parts in there. Hmm. So it's a totally different ball game now. You're absolutely right. It's fanatical people who are making this happen, because you, as we see, and now I'm not saying it's wrong to be fanatical, so not all the geeks, don't get me wrong, but this is the business now. You have more people that are so into science fiction, into everything, that they can't get enough of it, and whatever little, you know, tidbit is thrown out there, they jump on it like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I guess it's just one of those crazy things, sign of the times. We are at our halfway point, so we'll be right back with A Game from the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back to Came From The Radio Show host, Mark.
You have been listening to...
this is a live show, everybody. Welcome back. It's Came From The Radio Show host, Mark Torres speaking, the official radio show of the Big Apple Con. With me, I have Hassan Godwin on the phone, and we're still working out the technical difficulties. With our guest on the air, so I will just do a little filler while we're getting it all worked out. So, as I was mentioning, we are the official show of the Big Apple Con, and that will be having a convention at the Winter Con on the first weekend of December, the 6th and 7th, and of the convention in March, a one-day show celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Big Apple Con. For more information, go to www.n, as in new, y as in yes, c as in comic, b as in book, m as in mark, nycbm.com, and you can find out more information there. So we're all ready to go. So we have Hassan on the phone, and we have our special guest, Daryl Freemark, right?
Hey, how's it going?
There we go. All righty.
All right.
So, Hassan, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, good. So, let me do the formal introduction. So we have a very special guest this week, Daryl Freemark, who is the producer and editor of the comic book, the graphic novel, I should say, The Devil's Due in Dreary. You also have produced other stuff, right, Daryl?
Yes, I have.
All right, so let's talk about Devil's Due in Dreary. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about your other projects.
Sure. So The Devil's Due in Dreary is written by David Parkin. Dave and I met back in 2008, actually. He wrote a screenplay for this story, and I'm a film producer by trade, and I met him at the IFP Film Week in September of 2008, and we talked about the script, and I loved the script, and we initially were going to sit out to make it as a movie, and I realized that, you know, it made a lot of sense to try as a comic book first, both of the reasons of the story felt very comic book worthy, and because it makes sense to kind of try to pre-build an audience before you sit out to make a movie. And I proposed that to Dave, and Dave loved the idea. He's a huge comic book fan, and we set out to figure out what it meant to make the comic book. And over the course of the years, we put out four separate issues and eventually did the graphic novel. So that's kind of the story behind the project, but I also imagine you're asking me, what is The Devil Is Due in Dreary?
Yes.
So The Devil Is Due in Dreary tells the story of the town of Dreary, which is a town in the American Southwest. It's been living in fear of a prophecy that had been passed down for generations, saying that if two strangers pass through town, the devil will follow at their heels and drag everybody in town to hell. And pretty much the town has been so fearful of this prophecy that over the last 55 years, you know, they stopped talking to people from outside of town. They became very insular. Phones stopped working, mail stopped heading in and out of town, they stopped having children, the youngest person in town is a 19-year-old girl, and they've pretty much been living, waiting for this day, and on the day of our story, two guys, Jack and Tino, roll into town, their car breaks down, and pretty much the town feels they're bringing hell, and poor Jack and Tino wonder what the hell is going on, and the question is, what's going to happen? And, you know, nothing is really what it seems. There's a lot of kind of mystery behind what everybody says and who you can trust and who you can, and it all unfolds, and you see what happens in sunrise the next morning.
So this qualifies as comic book worthy. That threw me off from the beginning. What is comic book worthy as opposed to something that's not comic book worthy?
I guess any story is comic book worthy. That's probably the wrong choice of words. But, in full disclosure, I was never a huge comic book reader, but when I read this script, I kind of saw it as a comic book, and it's kind of hard to qualify that, but it told such like a kind of clear artistic story. It was so stylized, and certainly something you can accomplish in film, you know, in live action, but it felt like something that should be created first through drawing. And I can't exactly explain why that was my instinct on it, but Dave felt that way the whole time, because actually when I brought that up to Dave, he laughed, and he said, actually, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and he'd had some drawings already done of a couple of the characters, just friends of his, not people we ultimately used for the comic book, but he'd been thinking that all along. So I guess that was kind of... And the other thing... is that once we started talking to comic book publishers about it, you know, the idea of a screenplay is usually broken up into four parts, your first act, your first and second half of your second act, and your third act. And so it was very clear how this could be broken up into four books, and I think that excited the publishers we were talking to.
Well, I read the book, and it does flow very well, I have to say. It is, quote-unquote, I'm going to use that term, comic book worthy. I felt that a lot of comic book series can be played out as regular television series, and I always find that if they're translated into movies, they always lose some stuff. So since you had planned to make this into a movie, did you find yourself adding more stuff to the comic, or do you find that this is probably going to be whatever is going to be in the feature film?
It's actually really interesting because when Dave originally wrote the screenplay, you know, he obviously wrote it to be a film. And then when we embarked on doing the comic book, one of the first comments that we got from our initial publisher was it starts off with too much exposition. You know, it's a comic book. It really needs to start off with a bang. You need to see more action at the top. So Dave added a couple of really cool scenes, and we thought about it, and it was like, well, you kind of want that in a movie, too. You know, you don't want to spend the first 20 minutes of the movie hearing backstory and all that. So, you know, it easily helped us to kind of see the movie in a different light. And Dave has since rewritten the screenplay. I actually just reread the screenplay that he's rewritten. And a lot of what came in the comic book has been changed in the screenplay. But I think your question is, will there be more in the movie, or will the movie be different, I guess, than the comic book? And there's certainly, you know, in a comic book, I don't think we could go into as much character depth. You know, it's a little harder to keep certain things that are mysterious. It was harder to explain without having characters just stand around and talk about it. So I think that there will be more, ultimately, in the film. But not more in terms of, like, a different story in any regard, but I think just more about the characters and a couple of additional characters that didn't quite fit into the comic book.
Hassan, do you have any questions for Daryl?
Yeah, sure. Comic books and movies seems like a trend that's kind of here to stay. Just comic books preceding the movie, or comic books being like an impromptu press kit for a movie, or like even in a weird way, kind of storyboards preliminary storyboards for a movie. Do you find that the industry, as an initial filmmaker, do you find the industry is really taking comic books way more seriously as potential, you know, content product for films now than ever before?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there are kind of two parts to what you just said. The idea of a comic book kind of working as a press kit or a storyboard is really true. I mean, it's something that we imagined might work when we embarked on this, but it really did. As I explained, you know, doing the comic book enabled us to rethink how the screenplay should be written, so it definitely storyboarded for us, and I think that as we start talking to directors, which, you know, we hope to do imminently, you know, to be able to say, here's the screenplay, but also here's the comic book, will help them, you know, kind of see our vision of it a bit. And certainly as far as the press kit goes, I think that there's that also helps in two regards. It helps in the fact that we can go out with this project and say, here is a marketing tool for it. Here's something you can look at and see and follow before the movie ever comes out, and certainly continue to follow after the movie. But I think it also helps, you know, in terms of investors or studios getting behind a movie because they can really see it. And that segues into the second part of the question is, you know, are comic books here to stay in film, and is this a, you know, a trend that is going to keep going? And I think for sure. One of the things that Hollywood and the bigger studios are doing now is taking fewer and fewer chances, and part of taking fewer chances means, you know, buying into established properties. And obviously we see tons of superhero movies now, but anything based off of a comic book or a book, I mean, Gone Girl, which I just saw last night and is fantastic, you know, it's based off a book. And I think that obviously, you know, Ben Affleck and David Fincher, you know, helped that movie a lot, and it's a good movie, but being based off a book allows it to already have a fan base that's going to tune into the film. And I think that's, you know, huge with the comic books, that if you already have a bunch of people that are interested, you know, that helps. And as you said, there's a marketing tool. It's something where, you know, if the movie's coming out, all of a sudden the comic book's being sold at airports and, you know, at stores, and they're adding a little sign display, you know, soon to be a movie or coming out November 3rd or whatever. And, you know, it's virtually free advertising.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Sure. I know you have other projects in mind. You are a movie producer as by trade first. So how do you, as a producer, decide what do you want to produce?
I mean, it's not easy. It's,
it shouldn't be.
It's, for me, it's two things right off the bat. The first thing is do I respond well to the story? And then the second thing is, do I believe there's an audience out there that'll pay to see the story? So there are so many great stories that unfortunately have such limited audiences that, you know, I don't know that I would want to go out and try to make that movie as much as I might love this, you know, the story behind it. So, I mean, I read half a dozen scripts a week. That's probably an exaggeration. I read a couple scripts a week. Things come to me all the time, and I'm looking for things that, as I said, tell a really good story, but also have an audience that will want to tune into that story, which is part of why The Devil Is Doing Dreary makes so much sense to me as a movie, because I think it's a great story, and I also think that by creating the comic book and building an audience, we will have people who are going to want to come see this movie, and we'll talk about it and all that.
Has there ever been a time where you've seen a script and you're like, this is terrible, but you can see how it would be find a potential audience?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry?
Has there ever been a time when you said you get scripts all the time and the ideas are produced, is that something that you personally like, plus something that'll have an audience? So has there ever been a time where you've received something in your hand like, oh, this is terrible, but knowing the industry as it is, you would say, oh, I know that there's an audience for this?
Without any expectation of you naming the product.
Yes, yes.
The answer is yes. all the time. And that's one of the hardest things, too, because, you know, as any person, you have to make a living. And, you know, I would love to follow my passion solely. And when you can figure out a way to follow your passion solely and, you know, make a living doing that, I think you've struck gold in so many ways, you know, personal and professionally. But yeah, when I look at those kind of projects, it's always a little bit heartbreaking, because it's like, wow, I don't like this story, but I can see why a mass audience might tune into this, and it's hard. And I've never said yes to one of those for myself, but it's a hard thing to turn away from. And then it's kind of like, gosh, this thing goes out and is a huge success. That's going to make me even sadder.
So if The Devil Is Doing Dreary, and since it was drawn as a comic book first, did you have actors in mind, or like a certain type of actor in mind for the roles that you have for the characters?
I mean, sure. There's the wish list. Dave, the writer, has certainly sent me actors that he really loves, that maybe aren't big commercial names, but, you know, would be great for the story. There's some perfect ones. I mean, for instance, the obvious one that we'll never get would be Clint Eastwood to play the preacher. I mean, how fun would it be to have, you know,
yeah,
Mr. Western himself?
I totally can see that, yes.
But we're also, like, no matter how great this project turns out, I'm not sure that Clint Eastwood would ever consider it. So we have a lot of other people that we think would be great. You know, and even down to some of the supporting characters, you know, the sheriff is kind of a fun character, and it's not a huge part, but he's interesting and he's twisted, and we've actually thought that might be really good for kind of a, you know, a burly comedian. You know, so we have a few people in mind in that regard as well.
So I know you have other projects, so why don't you tell us about the other projects you have done, because I remember you said you had a film out. You said it was out for like 2.5 seconds. Was that the quote you said that it was out?
Oh gosh, I hope I never said that about one of my films. Maybe you caught me at a tired moment. No, all of my films have been out for more than 2.5 seconds. I worked in New Line Cinema for 8 years, and I was a co-producer on Hairspray. So that was the biggest film that I worked on. That came out in the summer of 2007. But as a sole producer, I've been producing indie movies for, I guess, about 4 years now. My first movie, Allegiance, is a military thriller. It came out in December 2012. It came out in 3 cities theatrically, but was on video on demand. It's on Netflix now. It plays on BET. It's out in about 10 or 15 foreign countries. We just saw that it's coming out in the UK soon. My second movie is a movie called Some Velvet Morning, and that comes out on Amazon on, I think it's November 11th. But it was out last year in about 15 cities in the U.S., and 100% of the world will be putting it out. It's right now still going through, like, the preliminary stages, but it will be coming out everywhere, which is really exciting. And my third film,
Five Star actually is doing the festival circuit, and you know, the movie has played in Venice and at Tribeca, and we were just in Poland this weekend. I mean, I was not, but the movie played in Poland and in Rio, and we're finalizing a deal, so we can't say what that is yet because it's not formally announced yet, but it will be out in the U.S. Sometime next spring, probably, and then my fourth movie actually is untitled because we're changing the title, but we're currently finishing the edit on that movie and, you know, hope to have it in a festival in the winter or the spring of next year. So those are the ones that I've done so far.
We rarely have a producer on the show, so I'm always interested in looking at it from a producer's angle since now you're here with us. Why don't you share with us how difficult or how much work goes into actually producing a movie and actually trying to get it sold to a company?
So much. I mean, first off, like, people, I think one misconception about producers is that our jobs end at some point. I mean, I am, you know, Allegiance came out 2 years ago in the U.S., and I'm still, you know, handling quite a few things that happens with it. So when you work on a movie as an independent producer, you tend to work on it in perpetuity. So that, you know, and things will come up that'll, you know, even if you haven't done any work on the movie in a month, something could come up that could be incredibly pressing. You have 12 hours to figure out a solution. You know, a piece of artwork is been rejected or, you know, whatever the case might be. So as far as that goes, it's always something that you have to kind of keep track of, and you always kind of have to be available to a certain extent. As far as the amount of work putting the movie together and, you know, throughout the process, I mean, producers are kind of like CEOs of companies, but they're like CEOs of companies that are just starting. Every time you start a movie, it's like starting a new company. You have to find investors. You have to, if it's not going to be individual investors, you have to look to partner with companies or try to find, you know, foreign markets that might pre-buy your rights so you can use that money to make your movie. You have to find your cast. You have to hire all your department heads, you know, much like if you ran a store, you'd have to have somebody in charge of sales and somebody in charge of marketing. I mean, when you're putting together a movie, you're going to have someone directing it and someone shooting the movie and, you know, somebody doing the wardrobe. And those are all things that the producer needs to oversee and hire, needs to be responsible for the budget. And then once the movie goes into production, you kind of become a, almost like a fireman. It's like, everything's going smoothly. You can kind of sit and monitor, and then inevitably things pop up. You have fires you have to put out. You know, I've never made a movie where there weren't a handful of things that became emergencies that you just had to deal with. And then trying to find a buyer, you know, I've been fortunate. All my movies have played in prestigious film festivals, so buyers pay attention. You hire a sales agency usually, and the sales agencies that I've worked with have been fantastic and have been able to contact the buyers and, you know, pitch our movie properly. And, you know, the buyers will all watch the movie. And, you know, we've had interest from multiple companies on each one of my movies. So it's not like sitting there and saying, okay, well, one person, you know, one company is interested, so I guess we'll go there. So it's been nice to be in that situation. But, you know, you can certainly wind up in a situation where the interest is low and you have to self-distribute, which is not a bad thing, but it means a whole lot more work. And then when you do sell the movie, it's a matter of getting the company that buys the movie all the proper technical specs for the movie and making sure all your contracts are done right. And, you know, in my experience, you always find there are a couple things that maybe slip a little bit, and you're like, oh, man, like, that guy's contract said he should be credited as such and such, but, you know, we worded that wrong in the credits, and then you have to go back and amend the contract or change the credit. So there are always, like, these little things that that do come up. As well as it, you know, you want to be able to promote your movie properly and make sure the company you're working with is on board for the same message that you're on board for. So it's a constant game of communication, and I feel fortunate that just about everyone I've ever worked with has been great to communicate with, and, you know, you wind up on the same page. But that's important. You know, you make a you make a thriller and the company wants to promote an action movie, and suddenly, you know, an audience is confused and disappointed. So it's a matter of just making sure everybody understands that they're behind the same movie.
That's quite a job description. I mean, I've, you know, not speaking, like I said, we hardly ever have a producer on, so that's amazing how much you got to do. You know, for us lowly guys, we think, oh, producer just sits there and just signs the checks and have a nice day. But wow, that's I'm actually impressed by the amount of hard work and dedication you put into your stuff.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And it's, you know, the money comes from somebody else, so it's our job to kind of have a relationship with that money. And so, you know, the investors, we need to do right by our investors, and that's, you know, that's something where you want somebody who wants to continually work with you on that side of it. So it's communicating to them how the product's going, and then as far as, you know, paying money, like the littlest thing that goes wrong and costs my movie money is very upsetting to me. I take it very personally. Like, you know, hey, if we just lost an hour and had to pay everybody overtime an hour because, you know, somebody forgot to strap in a light and drove to the next location and busted the light, and now we have to go out and get a new light or something. You know, those are like little things that do happen on set. That's upsetting. Like, you know, you want to make sure you're hiring people who take pride in what they do and understand that, you know, we're not sitting on top of a pile of gold and can just throw money at problems. You know, you make sure it's not a blank check. Minimize the problems.
Wow. With less than 5 minutes to go, since you're all about producing and promoting, why don't you tell everybody where can they see your stuff, you know, websites, anything you want to promote, now's the time.
Oh, great. Well, I think first and foremost, I'd like to promote The Devil Is Due in Dreary, since that's what we came on here to discuss first. So The Devil Is Due in Dreary can be found on our website, thedevilisdueindreary.com. And you can buy individual issues if you want to just give it a chance to see if you like it, or the full graphic novel. And actually, we have a coupon code that you can use because we were just at New York Comic Con, so you can use NYCC for New York Comic Con and get 20% off of any order if you want to read our book. Beyond that, you can certainly follow us on Facebook, and you know, we post updates, and as the movie gets going, we'll certainly be very update heavy, both on Facebook and on the website. Beyond The Devil Is Due in Dreary, my other projects, Allegiance, as I said, it's available on Netflix now. Certainly it's on iTunes. It's on BET. Some Velvet Morning will be out on Amazon in November. It is on iTunes as well right now. And Five Star, you know, keep an eye out for it. Follow us on Facebook too. We're very, very active with Five Star on Facebook because the movie's doing festivals and we announced all of our screenings and everything. But keep an eye out for a bigger announcement to come, hopefully in the next couple of months. And anybody who wants to follow me on Facebook, you know, Daryl Freimark, and I'm not shy about talking about my project there or talking to anybody in general.
So I do suggest that you get the whole story, because I did read it as a graphic novel, The Devil's Due in Dreary, so I would be biased to say to read the separate issues, because I really can't say where one part began and one part ended, but it kind of flowed all the way through. It was a very interesting concept, and I think people should get the whole thing, because sometimes just one issue doesn't really do it justice.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I agree.
Hassan, we have like about 3 minutes left. Do you have a final question or a final thought?
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and explaining the nuances of producerhood to us, because it's very little information that the outside person actually has about the job. And good luck with good luck with all your projects, and good luck with this particular project that you want to push further. I'm very interested to see what happens. Looking forward to it.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate you guys having me on the show, and I hope that I can continue to keep you guys as fans of Dreary, and hopefully you'll keep an eye out for future projects, as there certainly will be more down the pipeline.
Yeah, and whenever you have something else you want to promote, you're more than welcome to come back. I know you're a world traveler, as I like to say, because you were all over the place promoting stuff, I would appreciate you coming back and letting us know for that. Do you have a final thought for us before we go?
Sure. You know, the one thing I realized when we were talking about producing, I actually left something out, because, you know, I talked about, you know, working on projects and,
and getting them through the pipeline, but it's also about developing. And I have, you know, Dreary, obviously we've spoken about the amount of work that I've been doing thus far with Dave, but, you know, I have a handful of other projects that I work very closely with my writers on, and I develop, you know, and I look to set up and make. So the goal is to make a couple of movies next year and a couple of movies the year after, and it's a constant juggle between the movies that we've already made and the movies that we're looking to make, and trying to stay on top of everything. But I absolutely love what I do, so I look forward to waking up and working every day.
Oh, that's awesome. My final thought is make sure you guys check it out. It is Daryl Freemark and The Devil Do In Dreary. Check out the Facebook page, and I know they have the Twitter, which is Devil In Dreary, right?
Correct.
All right. So that about does it for us on this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of this show, you can go on to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com, and listen to the archives, which will be up in a week or so. Don't forget about the big conventions that are coming up from the Big Apple guys at www.nycbm.com. We will see you next week.
Great. Thanks.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.